chapter 9. We are going to be having a part 2 on our discussion last week of chapter 9, verses 24 through 27. Sophie had to go in there. She was putting her coat on. She had her hand up. Isn't it wonderful, brother, isn't it, after the exchange that Ted and I just had and that prayer, to be part of a congregation that just knows so much love and joy and, you know, peace in each other's presence. You know, we truly are blessed, and I think just ridiculously so sometimes. What a wonderful congregation. So, good to see everybody here. As you have a look at the screen there, you can see I'm suggesting that tonight we will be having to put our thinking caps on. This is material that is really very confusing, you know, apparently. And that because there has been just a plethora, there's a fun word, an abundance of ideas and interpretations and understandings of these verses 24 through 27 in chapter 9. Now, I'd like to say at the outset here, though, that, you know, truly, it's understandable. And it doesn't distress me, really, that we do have these issues going on. We're talking about an ancient prophecy. We're talking about 2,500 years ago. We're talking about very specific events that then are being foretold at that time that are now 2,000 years old. The sheer antiquity, you know, coupled with the specificity of the prophecy makes it difficult to confirm. You know, we're looking for extra-biblical, non-inspired, somehow preserved works from two millenniums ago that would be so clear that we'd be able to understand then some of the intricacies of this prophecy. But it's not the case. It's too far back. And we have issues with calendars. There's at least three different ways that people have kept time through this period, and so that throws a curve at us. We sometimes have kings that will have the exact same name as another king, Darius the First, Darius the Second. How about Cyrus the First and Cyrus the First? What do you do then? You got two kings in between. Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. And then you have overlapping regencies in which kings have a son that they're grooming for, the father's inevitable departure. And so for some years, and it varies widely, then they'll both be ruling. And well, how do you start one and then the other when really both of them, you know, are there? And then the manuscripts that can be a whole welter of problems all by themselves, just not being clear. And then, of course, not too many of us read those original languages. So now we're looking at translations anyway and the preservation of all of those. So what I'm trying to say here is that on this particular prophecy, and I mean above all others, greatest minds and scholars of many centuries have just been befuddled by how to understand chapter 9, verses 24 through 27. Now, and yet, it really does boil down to only a few details. The general prophecy is clear as a bell. We all know what most of it is talking about. In fact, we pretty well know what all of it is talking about. But as you saw last week, and as we'll be developing again here tonight, there are these individual few details that just seem to elude us. So we'll start again tonight by looking carefully at the passage. Much of the problem, for me at least, has been through the years, just simply holding all the pieces in my mind. Being able to remember and then compare, you know, all of this to make sure that I don't have some kind of clash or, you know, jarring error in the midst of this. You've got to kind of hold it all in your mind at the same time. So we're just going to look line by line. I will put it up on the screen. You can look at your own Bibles if you will. But we have a very concise, a very, singular prophecy. It's not dependent on what went before. It's not dependent so much on what comes after. We just have these four verses. So in verse 24 of chapter 9, it says, 70 sevens, not 70 weeks. Weeks is a mistake. It's an error. The word is sevens. Everybody agrees that's the case. In antiquity, we had a translation that gave us weeks. That was a mistake. It was a very popular translation, the Old King James, and so that stuck with us for a long time. But it doesn't say that. It says 70 sevens have been decreed, speaking to Daniel, for your people. That's Daniel's people. The people that Daniel's a part of at that moment, 2,500 years ago, 70 sevens have been decreed for your people, Daniel, and your holy city. Daniel's holy city is not Susa. Daniel's holy city is not any other city but the city of Jerusalem. And 70 sevens have been decreed for his people and his holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. There are six things in this particular translation. In the course of this week, I've had the opportunity to speak with my man, a man I count as a true scholar, an individual, you know, is one of the directors at the archaeological dig at Shiloh in Israel. You know, this is a brilliant mind. He's a very accomplished individual. He's astonishing. And he introduced me to a great deal more problems in this text. Okay? His name is Steve Rudd, by the way. He runs Bible.ca. Many of you will know of him from the work that he's done on that website. If you haven't been to Bible.ca, I highly recommend it. You know, have a look. But what he pointed out, and I found in other commentaries, you know, in various places, is that even in these six identifiers, there are manuscript differences in antiquity between Masoretic texts and Vaticanus, in case you're interested. And when you go back and compare those, they're really pretty dramatically different as well. So, in fact, one has seven instead of six, and then you can translate them various and different ways. And so just for instance, I decided not even to mention it last week when it says here to make atonement for iniquity. Just take that one. Atonement for iniquity. Well, atonement carries one idea in our minds and is attached to that word, you know, a definition that's really different than the idea of reconciliation. But as it turns out, depending on which Hebrew you're talking about and manuscripts and all of this, you know, it might be that you would better translate this as reconciliation, to make reconciliation for iniquity. Well, that calls up a different idea, but in the end, I think, as we all agreed last week, we all know that these things are centered in Jesus. So no matter, you know, how you, what manuscript you're using, no matter how they get translated, no matter the various different ways that they might be either translated or understood, these six things Jesus did. It's not a problem. We know that. So then comes verse 25. So, because Daniel, these 77s have been decreed for your people in your holy city, these six things will happen. So, you are to know and discern from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, which will be much of the whole class tonight, what decree was there to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, between those two points in time, the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem and Messiah the Prince, there will be seven sevens and 62 sevens. It will be built again, so that has to be a reference to Jerusalem, with plaza and moat, reference to Jerusalem, even in times of distress, a reference to Jerusalem. So, in verse 25, Daniel is to understand this. He's supposed to know that there'll be a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, that it will be built again. The plaza and moat are a part of this rebuilding, even in times of distress is a part of that rebuilding, and that from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem with plaza and moat in times of distress until Messiah the Prince, there'll be seven sevens and 62 sevens. It'll be built again. In 26, then after the 62 sevens, Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. And the people of the prince who is to come, so now we're looking down the road from this Messiah being cut off, But there'll be this other prince who will come. This people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. It's got to be, then, Jerusalem again. It's the only city we've been talking about. It's the only city it possibly can be. Has a sanctuary. And the people of the prince who is to come will destroy both. And its end, the end of the city, the end of the sanctuary, will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. And then in 27, and he, who's the he? Several options. You know, much of our confusion then will derive right out of a two-letter pronoun. He who? But he somebody will make a firm covenant, or else he will renew a covenant. Depends on the manuscript, depends on the translation. You know, you got these issues. But he, in the New American Standard that I'm reading, will make a firm covenant with the many, so apparently not with all, for 1:7, but in the middle of the seven, I messed up there, I see how I kind of got weak, I didn't find one of those, that should be 7, he'll put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. Well, who are our candidates for individuals who would make a firm covenant and then in the midst of a 7 can put an end to sacrifice and grain offering? And on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Now, help us, excuse me, to understand then maybe who the he is, because he is the desolator. But there it is. These four verses have a lot of parts. These four verses can be translated differently so that those many parts can become even more parts. And now we're trying to keep in the air a whole lot of bowling pins, you know, can we juggle all of this and make sense of it and come out with a clear understanding. So, what I've chosen to do after 4 weeks of preparing for this night, I think I've studied harder on this than I've anything now for the last couple of years, since I'll hold the title. You know, is to create some charts that I've never used before. I built them all myself. You might want to, you know, jot some of this down. But I recognize that much of the problem for all of us as students, everybody, you know, without exception, is just being able to envision, well, there are 77s, and then they're cut up into three parts. There are 7 of them, and then there's 62 of them, and then there's 1 of them. And then some of the information that's being uttered is not even necessarily in any of those 7s. It just says, and we're given additional information, and so we're not even sure if the material is to be taken exactly consecutively for everything that's said, or only for a certain point, and then later, and there'll be this addendum that's out there. So what I've done is build these charts and try to have some consistency with them so that, again, we can better not just hear it, but see it and picture what our problems are. So in Daniel 9:24, we have been told 77s have been decreed. And I made a big deal out of this last week, making a big deal out of it again tonight. It's one of these very foundational kinds of things that just permeates everything you do. It colors everything that we're trying to understand. If you forget that this is all about Daniel's people and his holy city, then you could make some mistakes. Because that is the cap on the whole box. That is the summary description of everything that follows. 77s are decreed for your people and for your holy city. It's got to be tied into them. And then it says 6 things about the people and the holy city. To finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, bring in everlasting righteousness, seal up vision and prophecy, and anoint the most holy. Now, I've chosen, again, just for consistency's sake, to stick with the New American Standard's translation. That doesn't mean it's necessarily correct or best, but I'm just sticking with it for consistency's sake. As I'm unraveling all of this, I'm not touching on a wide variety of alternative translations and therefore ideas. So I just want to assure everybody, I'm not unaware of these alternatives and these other ideas, but, you know, just for instance, one of the scholars that I listened to now three times on a tape recorder, Jim Futterbaugh, some of you'll know, a magnificent mind, extremely thorough Bible student, you know, tremendously talented, you know, he spent 90 minutes on the first class on these verses. And then he went to the next class, and that's what it is. If you're going to touch all of the alternatives, then we're going to be here for a long time. We will still have the same mileposts. We will still have the same essential bracket in time. We're still really going to come out with the same thing. So I just want everybody to know that I'm not, you know, afraid of these other alternates. They don't mess up the understanding or anything. It's just that I'm not choosing to take the time to go deal with every single alternative, because this is the fact. No matter how you translate those, no matter what manuscripts you're reading, no matter what you do with those six things in verse 24, only Jesus can do it. It's not Donald Trump. It's not Erdogan in Turkey. It's not Putin in Russia. It's not anybody in all antiquity. It's not anybody coming either. We know when you read your Bible that it is absolutely certain those six things are grounded in Jesus the Christ, Son of the living God, and ultimately in his sacrifice for sin. He is the only candidate. There just isn't any possibility of anybody else. So I'm not going to go through all these alternatives. You know, I just don't think that it's necessary. That's who we're talking about. So let's pass on then to verse 25. So what I did last week, spent most all of our time just on that first verse. And I left you there. So now we're going to pick up, and we're going to go on into verse 25. Always remembering that 77s have been decreed for your people and your holy city. So you are to know, Daniel was told, from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Now when Daniel thinks about his people and his city, his people are the Jews and his city is Jerusalem. And what is the state of Jerusalem in what is either 539 or 538 or 37 or maybe 36, but somewhere in those 530s there, what is the state of Jerusalem when Daniel receives this vision? It's desolate. It was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. There were two invasions and then complete devastation. And that's the way it's been. Daniel, we learned last week, we looked at all the first verses, reading, you know, first 23 verses, was reading Jeremiah chapter 25 and chapter 29. They both specify that there will be 70 years of the captivity. That's, when do we go by 70 years is what that is. And he knows he's been living through it. Now, of course, I added the number one right here for reasons you'll see in just a minute. But from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, that's our number one thing. And then the number two is, until Messiah the Prince. So we have two anchors, and we have a beginning and an end. And we're talking about time between two events. The restoring, the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince. That's the bracket in world history somewhere. Two things. There will be, number one, 77s, and number two, 62 sevens. I see something went wrong. I've already had that number sign, you know, right there for the number two, like I do here. But the point is, restore and rebuild Jerusalem is apparently attached to the first part, the 77s. And then the Messiah, the Prince, you know, is the ending part, and that's the 62 sevens. So clearly, to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah, the Prince, you've got to take the 77s that are attached to restoring and rebuilding Jerusalem, Add them to the 62-7, so you get 69-7, and then you're going to see Messiah the Prince. So that's apparently undeniable. And I've never found another commentator who didn't think so. And then, it will be built again with plaza and moat, is our number one idea to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Even in times of distress, that also is attached to our first idea, to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. So as it turns out, in this verse, Daniel is to know that with regard to his people and his holy city, 77s have been decreed. And they're going to start with the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, which apparently has got something to do with 77s. And it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress, until Messiah the Prince comes. That's the end result. So in the verse, the great majority of the verse is talking about what? Well, the Messiah is only mentioned in almost in passing. He's the end of it. But it's all this restoring and rebuilding and the 77s that are attached to it, the building, the plaza and moat in times of distress, that just constitutes the bulk of the passage. So it's important. And we're going to try to figure out what we think that means. But at least right here, while we still got it up on the screen, something that was kind of fresh and new for me, and then as I spent hours, plunging around through Ezra and Nehemiah and Isaiah and all kinds of different chronologies and manuscript variances and all the stuff I've been through, this last 4 weeks, trying to prepare for this night, one of the things that jumped out after such intensive study, really focused, on this one thing, is that plaza and that moat. I don't think I've quite paid enough attention to that in the past. It will help us, I think, in a little while in making a choice that's profoundly important. I'll show you in a minute what I mean. But this issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild what? Jerusalem. Now let me ask you this. Is Jerusalem an altar? No, there's an altar in Jerusalem, but is Jerusalem an altar? No. Is Jerusalem a temple? No. Jerusalem is not a temple. Jerusalem is a city. There's a temple that is also going to be rebuilt in Jerusalem. But what was kind of fresh for me, remember it's been 17 years since I've studied Daniel this hard, since I taught it the last time. I hope to live to be 193 or 4, so I get to do this more often. Great. It's been 17 years since the last time. But this rebuilding of Jerusalem, we're told specifically, is with plaza and moat. Is there a moat and or a plaza that you would necessarily associate with the temple? Well, there are courtyards, but you don't need a moat for the altar. And so there's a moat and a plaza. Another thing that I got to thinking about is that you do not need to have water in a moat. But moats are most often associated with walls. And the moat is the channel that's dug around it. Whether there's water in it or not, they do have sewers in most cities, and the water could be gone. But it becomes an additional obstruction that slows soldiers down, so you can pick them off, your arrows, spears, rocks, whatever you're throwing at them. The moat doesn't have to have water, but it would be associated with a wall. So, the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the sign of the Prince, there will be 77s, 62-7s, but it will be built, plaza and moat, in times of distress. So we've got to look for a time when Jerusalem is being built in times of distress. Now at this point, you're probably picking up the way I'm emphasizing things. I'm trying to say, I think some get misled, and perhaps even I have been misled before, seeing the rebuilding of a temple and not remembering that that isn't what the prophecy said. The prophecy said Jerusalem.
But I'm reading temple, and then I'm equating the two. Well, sure, the temple can only be in Jerusalem, and yes, the temple will be built in Jerusalem. And in fact, the temple clearly was built before Jerusalem when you read Ezra and Nehemiah. But I think I was just kind of equating temple with Jerusalem and making a terrible mistake as a result. Jerusalem is not a temple. The temple is not Jerusalem. They're different. And Jerusalem is going to have a plaza and a moat. No such is said about the temple. So now, in 25, we have those things. Weeks, we've established, is not weeks at all. It's sevens. And by common agreement, and it's really the only thing that you'd expect or would make sense, you know, the sevens here would be years. And it's not hard to reach that conclusion because when we look at the statement, the coming of the Messiah, Daniel's time, the decree to rebuild, when was Jerusalem rebuilt, you know, you don't have any choice. It's not seconds, it's not minutes, it's not hours, it's certainly not weeks, it's not months, it's not seasons, it's not decades, it's not centuries. It's years. So we're talking about time. We got a beginning. We got an end. We got seven of these. We got 62 of these. We got a last one. And we're looking for the six things that are going to take place in verse 24, and only Jesus can do that. So what we're going to do now, we've got quite a few charts here that are all designed to just try to line up and give us boxes to help us to remember. Seven sevens plus 62 sevens. If sevens represents 7 years, equals how many years? 483 years. 483. Seven sevens plus 62 sevens, if we're talking about groups of 7 years, equals 483 years. Yes?
When you were doing your study, did you happen to think about the way the Jews were to take their years anyway from Leviticus? I mean, because they always had, they would count their years in sevens and then have their seventh Sabbath, and then seven sevens would be 49 years and they'd have Jubilee.
50 years of Jubilee.
So this would probably be something that they would, or that to the Jews would make sense because this is how God had set them out to do their punishment.
See, again, this is just so important, brethren. Who's the prophecy given to? Daniel. It concerns whose people? Daniel's people. In what time frame? While Daniel's breathing. Everything Ted's just talked about with, you know, cyclical years and jubilees and all of that had to do with fields lying fallow and returning deaths and everything is a component part and a basic part of Jewish thinking. Is any of that a basic or a component part of our thinking? Not at all. And so my point is, Ted, I think that Daniel knew and understood. And it wasn't so hard for him. Why is it hard for us? We don't use the same calendar. We don't group things the same way. We don't have any of the same feasts. And we're 2,000 years after Christ, which is 500 years after Daniel. So we never had to begin with. So, the direct answer to your question is, all of these things have been looked at, and in the end, it still came out to 483 years. So, true, they had lunar years, months, you know, 30 days, and not varying, they didn't do it leap years, you know, all those kinds of things. But in the end, Ted's absolutely right, it's from the standpoint that I think it was pretty apparent to Daniel and his people, or would be much more so than it is to us. This is not a problem in Scripture. Trusting it, believing it, there's no error in it, you know, all that kind of stuff people try to make out of it. The problem is that we're not familiar with their methods of timekeeping as Jews. And Ted, there's not near enough, I think, in all your Old Testament to really give you the clear enough picture, you know, to dig it out, because we're still left with trying to figure out what's the beginning, what's the end. It's this decree that's our biggest problem. Okay, so glad you mentioned it, though, because it really does help us to appreciate the problems on our side. It's not on the Bible side. It's not on Daniel's side. Nothing like it. So, now we're going to take these 69 sevens, or 483 years, and we're going to divide them into the blocks that Daniel was told to divide them into. So the seven sevens appears to be 49 years. It's the only thing that makes sense out of these sevens is to see it as 7 years times 7 years, 49 years. 62 sevens then, each being a year, comes down to 434 years. Then, of course, when you add the two together, you get 483. But what's our big problem? From the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Well, what's our question? When was that? What decree? And then, of course, in conjunction with how, when does it end? When would the seven sevens start? When would the seven sevens end? And in fact, since not one word of explanation is ever given as to why you have seven sevens and then 62 sevens, there's not one word of explanation at all. You're just left going, oh, huh. So now we're going to go see if we can't find something that would make sense out of that since God chose not to tell us. Now, if you've learned anything from me, you've learned that I love Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to God, but the things that have been revealed belong to us and to our children. This clearly, brethren, is a secret thing. It even makes me a little nervous to start saying, well, I really have to know what those seven sevens are. God never said, I know that. Everybody knows that. But I really want to know. So I give you some ideas. I don't think it's wrong necessarily for us to think about it. He did it for some reason, but he isn't going to tell us what that reason is. So the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, when was that? And is there a way to figure out when the 49 years of the seven sevens might have ended? Likewise, we need a starting point, we need an end point for the 434 years that are called 62 sevens. But at the end, who do we find? Messiah the Prince. Who is Messiah the Prince? Every once in a while, you just bump into the wall and you say, well, I can't go any farther and I can't go back. And that's it. I found it. And so it's like, we know what it's talking about. We just don't have any idea what it's talking about. I know what it's talking about. It's time from the issuing of a decree to rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, and the Messiah is Jesus. I just don't know why he did it in seven sevens, or why he did it in 62 sevens, or why, there's 49 years, and then 434 years. And the 483 years will drive us all crazy, because after all, we got calendars, and they all vary, and we got manuscripts, and they vary, and we got translations, and they vary, and we got kings, and names, and sons, and I don't know what to do with it all. So, what do we got? 69 sevens appears to be 483 years, after which you're looking at the Messiah, who is the Prince, the Anointed One. So now we're going to look at the 69 sevens and 483 years, and for the whole block of it, we need a start and an end, for those four. And here's, in 925, the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince. But our question is, in the totality overview of the 69 sevens, to start with, we'll look at the 49 a little bit. It's from the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the Messiah the Prince. Here's the problem. There are four possibilities on what that decree is. There's four of them. And I just get so frustrated because one of them just towers over all the others as the obvious answer. The problem is it doesn't get anywhere near close to working out. Okay? And it's this one. Possibility number one, I'll give you all four, is in Ezra chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. It is also verbatim the last verses of the preceding book, 2 Chronicles 36. This statement is just tremendously important. It ends one book, it starts another book. And it says, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah. What was Daniel reading? Jeremiah. What had he figured out had been fulfilled? The 70 years. So Ezra starts off with In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he sent a proclamation throughout all his kingdom. He also put it in writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he's appointed me to build him a what? Does that say a city? It says to build a house. Not a city, a house in the city. Now, city's mentioned, but that city's location, everybody say, you know, at that time, let's go to Jerusalem. There might not be one rock on top of another, but we all know where to go. We're going to Jerusalem. Well, you're going to where it was. You're going to where it used to be. You know where it stood, and you can stand there too. But the decree does not say to rebuild Jerusalem, does it? Doesn't say a word about restoring and rebuilding Jerusalem. It says he's given me all this to build a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever there is among you of all his people, may as God be with him, let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the what? The house. Now, give you an idea where I've been going through these last few months. I went back to Ezra, and I'd like for you to open up, well, you won't have to, I guess, really, but just look here at what I get. I went back through Ezra to see if I could find a decree to rebuild the city. And I marked in green, this is just the first verses, every place in Ezra that mentions building a temple. In green, it's a temple. Look what happens as I turn the pages, how much green there is about that temple. Starting with the first verses there in Ezra. I got all the way down to chapter 7 before I could find any statement about building anything other than the house, the temple, and its altar. Okay? So the blue I put in my Bible to represent anything other than that temple. And that was the end of the book. There's just a very little bit. So I'm here to tell you, brother, most people, they pick Ezra 1, 1 through 3. And therefore, they pick 539 B.C., when Daniel's receiving the vision, they're picking that date as the decree in Ezra, 539 would match, for the rebuilding here of a house in Jerusalem. They take that as the starting point for restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Okay? And it's even better. You can go back to Isaiah 44, and Isaiah will name Cyrus 200 years before he's born and say that God picked him to go build an altar, a house. You know, and so it's awfully tempting, and I took it for years. Most people still do. But I got real careful this time, and I realized it, and I pored over Ezra, and I realized it. I'm equating build a house with build a city, and I don't think that's a good idea. They're not the same, and it doesn't work. But there it is. That's the one most people pick. And it's highly defensible. I understand what I did. I did it. But now, I'm not. Now, as you go to possibility number two, what would be a decree to restore Jerusalem in another location? And that brings us to Ezra chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. Here it says, leave this work on the house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on its site. Moreover, I issue a decree concerning what you are to do for these elders of Judah in the rebuilding of this house of God. The full cost is to be paid to these people from the royal treasury out of the taxes of the provinces beyond the river, and that without delay. Now look here. That is 21 years later than Ezra 1. That's 518 B.C. It's a different king. It's a different decree. And he's saying to the people that had stymied the Jews, opposed the Jews, and stopped the building of the temple. They had succeeded in stopping the building of the temple, which is the only thing that's ever said they were building. They stopped it. So there was an appeal made to a successor king to find out if we could go ahead and start building again. And he said, let this work on the house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on its site. Moreover, I issue a decree concerning what you're to do for these elders of Judah in the rebuilding third time of the house, not the city. The full cost is to be paid to these people from the royal treasury out of cash. The provinces, don't hesitate. So that's a popular one. It's not nearly as popular, but it's got a lot to commend it, doesn't it? And that'd be 518 B.C. Now we come to a third possible decree to begin our 69 sevens of 483 years. This is Ezra 7, and really it's the whole chapter. I just picked verse 12 and then verse 18. Of those two verses we have, this is the copy of the decree which King Artaxerxes gave to Ezra the priest. Now that is a very different decree. And it says, whatever seems good to you and your brothers to do with the rest of the silver and the gold, you may do according to the will of your God. Now please note that this house and this city thing that I've been making so much out of, I'll freely admit, doesn't exist here. It does, however, say, whatever seems good to you and to your brothers to do with the rest of the silver and gold. So you're going to go build this house. I'm telling you, go ahead and build this house. And I'm going to give you loads of money. And you can do whatever you want with the rest. Now what do you suppose you would do if you were a Jew who spent 70 years in captivity after your city and your temple were desolated and you moved back into town, and so far as I read my Bible, the only thing that's being built is the house of God. If you had money left over, what might you think about building? A city, a wall around it. So I realized, even to me, it feels like I'm kind of stretching here. It doesn't say what I wish it would say, but it allows what would work. Bill, yes?
Well, the last four words, according to the will of your God, not according to the will of
God. Well, true enough. So he's saying, I'm leaving it up to you and your religious sensibilities. Whatever you understand your God wants, you do it. Okay, and they're getting help from God, you know, so it says, from the decree to restore and rebuild what in 9.5? Is it the will of God to rebuild the city? Sure enough, we're just trying to find a decree to start our 483 years with. So that would be 457, 458, 455. You know, I've seen all those because we have the calendars and we have the kings, you know, but we know it's somewhere back there in the 450s. And it's as close really as we can get. I picked 457. You'll see why in a minute. It's totally self-serving. Okay, so now let's look at the fourth one quickly. Possibility number four would be Nehemiah. And Nehemiah's got a lot to do with all this too. His whole book to read while you're trying to sort all this out. He says in chapter 2, verse 1, and then I added 7 and 8, in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, I said to the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, which is by the temple. That's different than the temple. And it's gates for what? A fortress. Let me have that and for the house to which I'll go. And the king granted them to me because the good hand of my God was on me. So there is the fourth known possibility of a decree that has something to do with Jerusalem. And that one, I'm just calling it 444, one of my teachers taught me, you know, good memory trick, 444, for fortification. 444 for fortification brings you to Nehemiah built the wall 52 days, the great story of the whole book. So 444 for fortification. I'll never forget the date. Now, that's Nehemiah, that's rebuilding the wall in 52 days. And they were rebuilding the wall around the city. This whole book revolves around scouting everything. It's burnt, it's in ruins. You know, I'm going back to rebuild a wall. Okay? Not a temple. Temple's been there, dedicated since 515 B.C. He's getting there in 444. It's been around for 80 years. The temple's been standing that long already. So now, let's go and do this. If we start with the 539 B.C. and we add our 483 years, what do we come to? 56 B.C. Did Messiah the Prince come in 56 years before he was born?
No.
Don't think so. How we make this work? Well, usually they'll say, it is a big mistake to think that the 7s and the 69 7s and the 62 7s and the 70 7s are actual numbers. Just don't do that. And I listen to tape after tape because they say it is impossible to make it work. And I've told you this several times before. Whenever a teacher says, it's impossible to make it work, so I'm going to spiritualize and make a figure out of it and 10 means fullness and seven, you know, all the rest of that. What is the only thing he's really said to you? I don't know. So when he says, I don't know, maybe it's this, you know, at least be a little reluctant to say, okay, boy, that's the truth. Well, all he said was he didn't know. And so I'm saying, okay, if you start in 539, it's got Isaiah commended, it's got 2 Chronicles commended, it's got Ezra commended in chapter 1. What it doesn't have is any decree to rebuild the city. I looked. There's no decree at all to rebuild the city. Big and prominent as that passage is, and Isaiah included, there's no decree to rebuild the city. There's a lot of talk about the house of God, but there's no talk about the city. I think that's important. Sure no plaza or moat in it. So then comes 518 B.C. We had 483 years. We know we're off 3 years this way, 3 years that way. We can't be absolutely sure, but you know, we look at it and say, well, about 518 plus 483 brings us to what? 21 B.C. Does it look like that's going to work? Well, it really doesn't. There's no Messiah the Prince there. There won't be in any sense for 21 more years, or 24, or 19, but he's not there. So then comes 457. In 457, if you add 483, what did you come to? What do you come to? We'll come back to that in a minute. It's about 26 A.D. Then there's 444 plus 483, and that brings you to 39 A.D. So which one do you suppose I'm going to pick? I'm picking 457 because of Ezra 7, where there is something other mentioned and a decree other than freedom to go build with king's money other than the house. And 26 A.D. just happens to be the year of what? That Jesus was baptized by John. In a moment in which the Holy Spirit himself appeared and spoke. That's a moment in history, isn't it? It's also, brethren, the only one that's going to work. And so I'm not shying away from Ezra 7 because it works. Now, I added this for you to think about. Let's look at the 7-7s now for just a minute. I've poured over this for quite a while. So we're same chart, really. We've just gone from the 62-7s to the 7-7s now. We start with the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. We're still going to end up with Messiah the Prince. But why? Well, we were told that in the 7-7s, which is 49 years then, Jerusalem will be rebuilt with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. I showed you my ones and twos. That's what the great bulk of that passage is about. So let's do it again. Let's start in 539 and we'll add 49 years. What year do we come to? 490 B.C. What happened? 10, 20 years before, 10, 20 after? Nothing that we know. Now I have to proclaim my ignorance again, just like I was
criticizing the other guys a moment ago, we can't find anything. So here goes 518 plus 49 years. We get to 469 BC. Or we go at 457 BC. We add 49 years. We get to 408 BC. Or we take 444 and we add 49 years. We get to 395. So we take the only four decrees we can find that have anything to do with Jews going home. And they are 539, 518, 457, 444. We add our 49 years. We come out with these three. Would any one of these help us? Well, again, if you pick 457, you come to 408. And isn't that interesting? Because 444 to 408, we have Nehemiah going back, and in 52 days he builds a wall, which just might also have a what associated with it? A moat. And then, of course, he quit because they didn't need streets and they didn't need houses and they didn't need anything else. They just needed a wall. No, I'm thinking they need a city to go with the wall, because you put the wall around a city to protect the city. Okay? So, if we know it was in these years that the wall around Jerusalem went up, 408 is in the midst of these years that he would have been building. It encompasses the time of Nehemiah's rebuilding. Are we ever given an end date when Jerusalem was finished? Well, no. Does it take a second, a minute, an hour, a week, a month? How long does it take to build a whole city? But it takes years to build a city. So it looks to me like 457 plus 49 brings us down to 408. And by 408, they had their wall, their moat, and their plaza, is what I'm thinking, thanks to Nehemiah's work. And we started counting the 49 years from the same time we started counting the 483 years. And both of those, with 7 sevens or 62 sevens, is going to give us the proper ending point. So as we begin to wrap this up tonight, here's where I'm at. Showed you this chart last week. I like the best. It's got the city on here. If you take your 7 sevens, that chart says weeks and sevens, you start in 457, you add 49 years, you get to 408, and by that time, the decree had been issued and the city had been what? It's been built. Then we're going to have 62 weeks. That's going to take us down to 26 AD. Could you say that the Messiah has come unto Messiah the Prince at that time? I'm sure you could. He's not only born, he's grown, and he's received the blessing of the Holy Spirit. Now, is it now in him that finishing transgression, making an end of sin, making atonement for iniquity, bringing in everlasting righteousness, sealing up vision and prophecy, and anointing the most holy are going to take place? Yes. So what I'm suggesting is that all works just perfectly. But the others don't. And Daniel was supposed to understand it because God fulfills prophecies. The Messiah did come. The city was built. Our only problem is we don't understand the calendars and all these other problems well enough to say, oh, and by the way, in this site on that date, this professor, he, you know, hit the box, he opened it up, and there was a whole calendar in there, and they circled the date. Right here. 457, you know. Well, we haven't found that yet. Maybe one day we will, but this is what works. It's the only thing that reasonably gets us there. Now, let's look at the 70th seven, where we do have another really big problem. So in 926, we got this last seven. When does it start? Well, it says, then, after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. The Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. It says after the 62 weeks. Does it say immediately after? The next thing. It doesn't. That also caught my attention. It just says after. After 26 AD, the Messiah is going to be cut off and he'll have nothing. What about this, though? The people, the prince who is to come, will destroy the city and the sanctuary. Oh no, it's going to be torn apart again. And this end will come with a flood.
the Mountain Dew water, it floods the soldiers, and it has to do, get them completely overwhelmed. Even to the end, there will be wars. Desolations are eternal. Daniel has already talked about the abomination of desolation. We already saw that. And we've already seen Jesus talking about it and use Daniel's name when he did and tell us what generations that's going to come in. When will the rebuilt city be destroyed along with the sanctuary, and there'll be more of desolations determined, you know, all the way to the end? 66 to 70 AD happens to be immediate vicinity of 3.5 years, which would be right in the middle of a 7-year period, as a matter of fact. But stuff's not really adding up. You know, that's why it's a problem. After the 62 weeks, does it mean immediately after or not, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing? Well, we think that's the cross. And when he went into the grave, what did he have? Nothing. What have all the apostles done? Denied and fled into the night. All upset. 3 days later, we thought he was the one. Apparently not. He had nothing present at all. The people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city. Well, that didn't happen in the year Jesus died. So, it does, you know, there's a disconnect. It doesn't seem to be consecutive. We want it to be consecutive. I confess my ignorance again, but I propose this. Well, it wasn't immediately after, and it doesn't need to be. It doesn't say necessarily. It just says you're going to have these three periods. So in Daniel 9, 26 and 27, watch this. Then it said in 26, after the 62 sevens, Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. The people of prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. We know when that happened. You can't miss it in history. It ended in 70 AD, September. Its end will come with a flood. And it did. Even to the end, there'll be war. There was. Desolations are determined, like Daniel the prophet said in this generation, Matthew 24. So here's the next verse, though. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1/7. Well, is that the prince who has the people that do the destroying? Is he the one that makes the firm covenant? Or is it the Messiah that makes the firm covenant? Language allows both, and it drives us all crazy. Which one is it? But in the middle of the week, he, apparently the one that made the firm covenant with many, but not all, for 1/7, will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. Now we're still tearing, you know, not only our hair, but our teeth out. Does Jesus put an end to sacrifice and grain offering, spiritually, we would say, with his death and resurrection? Did you have to do that anymore? No. So there's a sense in which that is so up in heaven, that's, you know, known, but how many Jews quit? Well, none. They wouldn't have any reason to. Did Vespasian and his son Titus, in the course of the 3.5 years they were waging war against Jerusalem, did they put an end to the sacrifice and the offering? Well, kinda, because the war, you know, was so bad that the Jews, the inner sanctum and all that, finally quit. Josephus tells what a disaster it was, how upset they all were. So it could be either one. It seems that there's a sense in which putting a stop to sacrifice and grain offering would work either way. And then it says, on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. So this desolator is coming, and he'll get destroyed too. It's inevitable. But you know, the desolation's coming. What desolation is it? Brethren, it has to be 70 A.D., and everybody knows it, who is not a premillennialist. Okay, if you're not a Seventh-day Adventist, you can get this. If you're not a Jehovah's Witness, you can get this. If you're not a Baptist, you can figure it out. You know, so there's just enormous numbers of people who have not chosen Paul Ellen White, you know, or Charles Russell, and so they get it. It's 70 A.D. Okay. So what have we got? Well, brother, I'll tell you tonight, I'll change my mind tomorrow. This is the most difficult part of this all, but I'll say this. After the 62 sevens, Jesus did in fact come. He meets all six qualifications in 24. He is killed on the cross, and that means cut off, and he has nothing. But the people of the prince who is to come is not that Messiah, the prince. It's a different one. And the people of the prince who is to come, I think the prince is Titus, because he's the son of Vespasian, who went back to become emperor while that war was going on. And so I think he would be the obvious prince who's destroying the city and the sanctuary. It was Titus, the son of Vespasian, who was now emperor, who did the actual destruction. Yeah, it'd be Titus. If the end will come to the flood, and the end there'll be war, desolation, dark term, it's all war 66 to 70. He will make a firm covenant with the many for 1-7. If that's Titus, you had to live there to find out what he did. He was negotiating with the Jews, all kinds of talk going on. Josephus records some of these speeches. But if that's what he did, we don't have any way to see it elsewhere. Not recorded in Scripture, and we can't found, you know, that magic box yet. In the middle of the week, he'll put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. Well, this middle actually does, to cut in half, it has the idea of equality, and that sacrifice ended under Titus, the physical sacrifice ended toward the end, not in the middle of the 3.5 years. You know, what you just said, these people all say, you know, legally. So, well, I'm not going to say, let me just finish this, we'll come back to it. So sometimes he translates midst as if there's leeway, but it really means middle. He'll put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. It kind of doesn't fit in the middle to what Titus did. Then on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, though that phrase sounds like it would be different than the one that made the covenant. That means Titus out and takes us back to Jesus. Did Jesus make a firm covenant with the many? Will make does not mean make new. It's a term that has to do with make firm, as if to confirm or to renew or to restate what already exists. See how many problems we have. But it is make firm. That's why they translate it that way. Not a new covenant. Same covenant. He's just promising, I really am going to keep, you know, okay. It's only with the many. But in the middle of the week, he'll put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering, and on the wing of abominations will come one and make desolate. That's a different one. So the alternative is, Jesus is cut off in the middle of the seventh week. That, by the way, would be about 3.5 years after he was baptized. And that would make the seventh consecutive with the 62. You'd move right into it, wouldn't it? Yeah. And he would renew, you know, make promises, make firm, because he is the Son of the living God, with the many. He puts a stop to sacrifice and grain offering with his sacrifice. And then on the wing of abominations will come somebody else who will do the desolating, and he'll be destroyed. That's what I'm leaning to. It can go either way. Pronouns are a problem. They got to refer to something else. Does it refer to the abominator or to the Messiah? I'm picking the Messiah, and I cannot be wrong for this second, but I will be wrong in the next one. But I'm firm about this one. This is tough stuff. In the end, was Jerusalem rebuilt? Yeah. Silas and Moses? Yeah. Did the Messiah come? Yeah. Did he meet all 6 of the qualifications of 24? Sure enough. Was Jerusalem then again destroyed with a flood, never to have a temple again? Sure. Did every single thing that that said have come to pass in the time frame given because of the person that's given? It did. We just have detail problems, don't we? Okay? So, brother, it's kind of like, you know, I pulled a swinging sword like I was done and get, you know, out of its scabbard. And you can all see it's a sword! And then I say, well, I got it from Orlando Bloom. Look, filigree on that handle. And you can't see it. I can. God can. He did. Daniel might have figured it out. His people too. But can we now see it? No, and that's all it is. I know it's a sword. I know it's Jesus. Can't see the filigree.